Judd Apatow is the executive producer of Freaks and Geeks, and he joins us today at DVD Talk to talk about the DVD release. Judd, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the major issues on any DVD release is the music, and especially with TV shows, clearing music rights. So, how were you able to get songs from David Bowie and The Who and Billy Joel in a series out on DVD?
Well, I didn't do it. Someone else did it. His name is Dave McIntosh from Shout Factory, and he's my hero. One of the main reasons why we weren't able to get it out on DVD before that was because it takes so long to clear the music. You need somebody to call up the writer and the artist and the record company for every song. And so it took, 5 or 6 months for him to do it. And a lot of people just don't want their staff working on one thing full time for 6 months. But Dave is a genius, and he figured out how to convince everyone to let us use their music.
Were there any instances where you almost didn't get the song?
Nobody said no. There were a few songs that there was small hiccups while they attempted to contact people, but nobody said no. There really wasn't one song where it was a big battle. It was more like, we can't find that guy because he's not a musician anymore. He runs a hat factory. It was like that show, Bands Reunited, where you have to hunt down all of these people.
Was there a particular band that you had to hunt down?
There truly was only two songs that even took a little more effort than the others. They were just, really smart about it. I think what it shows is that all of the artists were happy with how we used their music. So it was really just a financial negotiation. We didn't have to reconvince anyone that we would do a good job with their songs.
I'm sure many were fans of the series.
And they had seen how we used their song and were okay with it.
I'm sure it doesn't hurt when going to a band like The Who in an episode where they're extolled as one of the great penultimate rock bands to get their music.
Oh yeah. I mean if we weren't able to clear the music, we wouldn't have put it out on DVD. We had no other option but to try to get everything.
You guys had some real success with the Freaks and Geeks petition for DVD. How did that all come about?
Well, what happened was a few companies showed interest in putting the show out on DVD, and when they ran the numbers, they decided it would be very difficult for them to make money on it. And after a few places said no, which were the main places you would assume would say yes, we became desperate, and we figured the only way we could convince someone to do it was if we could show how many people might buy it. So we threw a petition on our website, and you must remember that our show's been canceled for a long time. We don't have a lot of traffic on our website, but still 35,000 people signed the petition very quickly, and that seemed to change some people's minds.
So take us back to when Freaks and Geeks was on TV. What exactly happened?
Well, what happened was the first episode did well in the ratings on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and then the second episode tanked. At that moment, NBC thought this is a bad time slot, and after another week or two, they took us off for most of the winter, and brought us back in January on Monday nights. But right before we aired, ABC scheduled another episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire against, and we got clobbered. So they took us off for February sweeps. And then they said they were going to put us back on afterwards, and they would let us air all of our episodes in a row so that we could find out if anyone wants to watch our show. But after two episodes, they canceled us. So we never really got a chance because they didn't promote us much when we returned to the air in March. So people didn't even know when we were on, and then they canceled us before they even found out when we were on.
How many of the final 18 episodes on the DVD actually aired in the first run?
Well, there were three aired for the first time on the Fox Family Channel, and they never aired on NBC. There was another three that aired over the summer on NBC. On a Saturday night, from 8 to 11, they just aired Freaks and Geeks. But those episodes did not air in continuity with all of the other episodes, so that didn't make any sense. When we ran on the Fox Family Channel, and we were on every week in the intended order, the ratings were great for cable. It was a big success for them for a while, but there are only 18 episodes, so you can't run them forever.
Is the episode where we get to meet Kelly's family, was that ever aired, or is that exclusive to the DVD?
That aired on the Fox Family Channel, and they were afraid of that show because it was edgier than the others. But when you look at what's on the rest of network television, it seems silly now. Now we have television shows where they, show the point of view of a bullet as it passes through somebody's brain. They were nervous about a scene where Lindsay has dinner with Kim Kelly's family, and they all fight. Like, that's such a big deal. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It was just kind of a funny, episode filled with dark humor, based around the fact that Kim Kelly's life was a little more white trash than everybody else's. It was a hilarious episode. It's one of our favorites.
On the creative side, you had a real ensemble of directors and writers, people like Miguel Arteta and Jake Kasdan and Mike White. How did this all come together?
I didn't know Mike White. He had just finished writing for Dawson's Creek. At that moment, he had shot the film Chuck and Buck, but it hadn't come out yet. And NBC was demanding that we hire Mike White. They loved Mike White. And I kept thinking, why would I hire the guy from Dawson's Creek to write on this show? And I met with him, and he seemed great. And at some point, someone else that we were trying to hire bailed on us and went to Malcolm in the Middle. And then there was a slot that was open for Mike White. He turned out to be the most important writer we had on our staff because he understood how our television worked. And he was brilliant at helping us break stories and develop these characters. I would sit there amazed as he would pitch outlines for episodes. He's just an incredibly gifted storyteller, and Paul and I learned an enormous amount from him. Jake Kasdan, I met when I was working for the Larry Sanders Show. He came one day. He was visiting the set with his dad, Lawrence Kasdan, the great writer and director. And I had met him briefly once since then. He directed Zero Effect, which starred Ben Stiller, and Ben and I had just made The Cable Guy. And when we were talking about doing this pilot, I was trying to figure out who would be good. And for some reason, I had an instinct that Jake Kasdan would be great. The funny part about that is, at that moment, I had not seen Zero Effect. We had the same agent who always spoke highly of Jake. And I figured I would be involved in this production very deeply, so I wasn't nervous about it getting away from us. So I aggressively pursued Jake without ever having read or seen anything he'd done. But sometimes the universe tells you what you need, and Jake, is as important as anybody in why the show came out well. He hammered Paul on the script. He really had a clear point of view of what the ways were in which we could screw this up, and forced Paul to answer just hundreds of questions and to rewrite the script in ways that solved all of his issues about the script. And that led to tons of great moments that Paul wrote for the pilot.
Paul talks about how a lot of the things that happened to Sam and Lindsay came out of his experience, but in 18 episodes, there's a lot of stuff. So were there other sources that brought these kinds of stories in?
Well, Paul really knew who Lindsay and Sam Weir were and who the parents were because they were based on him and his family. We cast the actors who played the other freaks and geeks during a very long process in which we decided that we would rewrite those parts based on the actors that we liked. There weren't really well-defined freaks in the first version of the pilot. The story was very focused on Lindsay. And then we had Paul write these generic freak and geek scenes, and we had hundreds of people read them. And when we found actors we like James Franco or Seth Rogen or Jason Segel or Martin Starr or Sam Levine, we would rewrite the entire pilot around their personalities. So we weren't trying to find people who matched a vision that any of us had in our minds. We were just looking for kids who seemed real and interesting. Those characters are clearly, you know, influenced by Paul's experience, but they were also influenced by all the writers. Paul is more of a geek, so Freak experiences came from his observations about the freaks, but we hired people on our staff who were freaks, who told us crazy stories.
Who were some of your biggest freaks?
We had a writer on the staff named Bob Nickman, who was a hilarious stand-up comedian I had worked with, and he had a lot of great stories from his high school days. But I'll give an example of how the writers influenced the show. Jeff Judah was inspiration for the episode The Garage Door. When he was a kid, he was watching the Phil Donahue show, and they're doing an episode, How to Know If Your Husband is Cheating on You. And he was homesick today, and he watched it and realized that his dad was cheating on his mom. And he found a garage door click in his dad's car and realized it wasn't for their house. And he drove around the neighborhood clicking at every door he passed. And after several months, he found the house that worked with that had a garage that opened when you click that garage door opener. So that story came from him. My parents were divorced when I was a kid, and I used to come home every day and eat grilled cheese sandwiches and watch the Mike Douglas show and Dinah Shore. So some of the stories about Bill's mom dating the gym teacher are influenced by my experiences watching my parents date for the first time. And, you know, and everybody on the staff filled out these very long questionnaires that Paul and I wrote that had questions on it like, what was your worst drug experience? What's the worst thing you ever did in school? What's the worst punishment your parents ever gave you? What was the most embarrassing moment? And that's how we started writing the show, is by making all of the writers fill out these 10-page questionnaires. And a lot of those stories came from the replies to those questions.
I'm sure that has a great deal to do with why Freaks and Geeks touches people so individually.
Yeah. The show is very personal to everybody who worked on it. That's why it was so sad when it ended, because it's like your life getting canceled.
There must be a pretty high level of satisfaction now that this is on DVD.
We couldn't be happier, because it's really frustrating to have created something you're proud of and not have a venue to show it to people. So when we were given the opportunity to put this out on DVD, we worked really hard for about 8 months, almost full time, putting together all of these clips and making all of the booklets. It was very work intensive. What was fun was we used the fans to help us. So we had this girl, Tammy Lefko, watch all of our dailies from the entire series and tell us what she would like to see on the DVD. And that's how we found a lot of the clips. She watched, you know, over 100 hours of dailies and told us where the bloopers were and the funny alternate takes. We had several of our fans create the menus for the DVD. So that's very satisfying to have involved the people who care so much about the show in the actual making of the DVD. I'm just glad that it's in a form that we're all proud of and we didn't have to make any concessions. And the Shout Factory has been amazing about trying to do everything at the highest possible quality level. They weren't cheap about anything.
This is a real exceptional DVD. The transfers are really fantastic. It's full of extras. You know, I say it's everything but the kitchen sink, but I'm sure in the Easter eggs, you've got the kitchen sink.
Well, that's how we always say it. That's everything you want and a lot of things you don't want.
One of the things I really liked about the fan edition of the DVD was the film and television interview that the cast and crew did. Was that a difficult thing to get for the DVD?
No. I've been a big fan of the Museum of Television and Radio in Los Angeles for a long time. I try to stay active in assisting them in any way I can. They do amazing programs there. It's just, we're really lucky that that museum exists. So when we were about to be canceled, they, you know, held an event honoring us where we took questions from the cast, from the audience, and they videotaped everything so they can have it in the museum. So when it was time to put this out, I asked if we could get permission to put it on our DVD, and we found a way to do that.
It's definitely one of the nuggets that I think makes a fan edition worthwhile.
How did I mean? I couldn't watch it when we put it on the DVD. I had my assistant watch it and said, "Tell me if there's anything I should be really embarrassed about." But I remember that night very well, and I remember that it was a hilarious night. That the crowd was roaring, but it was also, you know, sad because it was clear that the guillotine was about to hit our neck.
It's a really interesting piece because even though the show was airing at that time, you get a real sense from you and Paul that the show was going to get canceled.
Yeah. And then, you know, we also put on the DVD a montage of images from the show that we created for that museum event. And that's just something we're really proud of. And every time I see it, it makes me cry. Have you seen the booklet for the 8th set?
I haven't. I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. I mean, the booklet is incredible because we took so many photographs and Paul put together this yearbook, which has all of these essays that we wrote about working on the show and reprints of articles about the show and a lot of information that a fan would want.
There's an incredible amount of stuff on the DVD and the behind the scenes. Did you shoot that in hopes that one day you'd have something like the DVD that you have now, or is that more for personal record?
I always assumed that we're going to get canceled and it's going to be seen forever on DVD and cable. So I saved everything that pertained to the show, all the photographs, all the videotapes, all the deleted scenes. I was very anal about it because I hoped this could happen one day. We were lucky that we had people on our staff who enjoyed videotaping everything and enjoyed taking photographs. So when it was time to do this, I just contacted them and asked them if they still had all of that stuff. Most of it was taken by Gabe Sachs, photos and video, and he saved everything. So I there was about 20 hours of it. I gave it all to Jason Siegel and Martin Starr because I knew he was playing around with Final Cut Pro, and I said, do you mind watching this and cutting some fun stuff out of it? And he said that he would. So it's kind of fun that the cast actually picked the behind-the-scenes footage and cut it together.
That's really cool. I think that's a first. I don't think there's been a DVD yet where the cast have been able to say, "Hey, you know, I like this little thing. Hey, I like that little thing."
Yeah.
So Busy Phillips was definitely part of the Core Freaks clan, but she doesn't appear in the opening. Is there any backstory behind that?
She was a guest star on the first episode, the pilot, and we shot this opening sequence assuming that she was going to be a recurring guest on the show. She was so great in the pilot that we decided to make her a regular. We assumed that we would make her a regular when we were shooting the opening sequence and asked DreamWorks if we could shoot footage of her to insert into our opening credits when we made her a regular. And they said that we were not allowed to shoot her for the opening credits if she didn't already have a contract to be in the cast. And I fought and fought, and they said it was a SAG rule. To this day, I don't believe it is a SAG rule. It doesn't seem to make sense that you're not allowed to shoot footage for the opening credits unless you're definitely going to use it. It seems ridiculous, but anyway, they wouldn't let me do it. But we had to make a decision when we added her to the cast. Do we reshoot our opening credits to include her, or do we stick with what we have and assume that we'll create new opening credits for the second season? So we talked to Busy about it, and she was very comfortable with not being in the opening credits. She didn't take offense, and we promised her that we would add her in the second season, and there was no second season. It really was a case of we loved the opening credits. We felt like a little bit of magic happened when we shot it, and we didn't want to dump it. Thank God Busy was cool enough to not have a big issue with it.
So Freaks and Geeks does well. Do you think we'll see Undeclared on DVD?
I think if Freaks and Geeks does well, then Undeclared will come out on DVD. It's a very similar situation. There's a lot of expensive music. There's a hardcore fan base. And I think if people come out and buy Freaks and Geeks in numbers that Child Factory needs to be profitable, they would assume that all those people who were happy with Freaks and Geeks would be interested in buying Undeclared. So I think what they're doing now is investigating the music licensing costs on Undeclared. And if it seems like it's doing well, they'll start officially clearing it. We have an enormous amount of material on Undeclared as well. I don't think it'll be as comprehensive a DVD as Freaks and Geeks because it's not as emotionally loaded as Freaks and Geeks. You know, Undeclared is comedy, hopefully one that people really like, but it's not as intimate as Freaks and Geeks. It's intended more to make you laugh than it is to touch you deep in your heart. And I'm really proud of it, and there's some hilarious stuff in it. I mean, some of the episodes of that show are as funny as anything I've ever worked on, and I hope we can get it out. And there were great guest stars on the show, like Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler and Ben Stiller. So there's a lot of fun things we could do. And we saved everything. We have all of the table reads and deleted scenes and auditions. I was probably more organized and clear than I was on Freaks and Geeks. And it's a fun one because a lot of the Freaks and Geeks actors are on it. Guest stars are stars. Seth Rogen is a regular. Jason Segel and Busy Phillips are semi-regulars. Kevin was hilarious in his book, as the evil head of a fraternity. Martin Stark came on once as the guy's nerdy friend from back home who outs him as a nerd. It would be fun to have it out there also.
So what project's next for you? What's next?
I produced a movie for DreamWorks, which stars Will Ferrell, called Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and that comes out July 9th. It's about an anchorman in San Diego in the 1970s and how he deals with the first female co-anchor, and it's a really funny, silly movie that I can only compare to films like The Jerk. And it was directed by Adam McKay, who used to be the head writer of Saturday Night Live, and he wrote it with Will. And I'm excited about that. As for DVDs, that's going to be an amazing DVD because Will does so many improvisations and we have so many extra scenes that were cut out of the movie. We're already planning, you know, for a really comprehensive DVD.
What are your plans after Anchorman?
After this, I wrote with Nicholas Stoller, who was a writer on Undeclared, I wrote a remake of the 1970s movie Fun with Dick and Jane, and they are going to shoot that this summer.
Do you have any plans to return to TV?
I'd like to go back to TV. I don't think I would do it for a network because I think the environment isn't open to the kinds of projects I would like to do. But I'm a giant fan of Nip Tuck on FX. Of course, I'm a big fan of the HBO shows like Sopranos and Curb Your Enthusiasm and Deadwood. So I can see myself down the line doing something for cable.
Judd Apatow, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully Freaks and Geeks will be up there in the top DVD sales charts. And that'll mean we'll see Undeclared on DVD.
Yeah, I hope so.